Good afternoon. In the interest of time, let's go ahead and get started. I'm Bill Tanner, one of the senior biotech analysts at Cantor. I'd like to welcome everybody to the second half of the first day of the conference. Hopefully, it's been helpful for you. Very pleased to introduce Rusty Raykov, who's the CEO of Fennec Pharma. Very interesting story we got to know about a year ago, developing PEDMARK, a product for preventing platinum-based oncology drug-induced hearing loss for pediatric indications. So some good data. I know Rusty will go through the story with you. So Rusty, thanks very much for coming to the conference. Look forward to your comments.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill, and thank you for Cantor to invite us a second year in a row. So these are the standard forward-looking statements. So cisplatin as a therapy was introduced in the early '80s. It became, subsequent to that, a mainstay therapy in various solid tumors in pediatric oncology. Unlike adult tumors, the efficacy is quite strong. What pediatric oncologists have been able to accomplish since the 1980s is quite remarkable. They have pushed survival rates for these solid tumors in the magnitude of 80%-90%, which is fantastic. If you interview some pediatric oncologists and ask them what is the biggest issue with using cisplatin, the number one thing that comes out is hearing loss. And the hearing loss is irreversible, it's permanent, and in many cases, severe. You could see the pictures on the right. You have a child with a cochlear implant. This is a very, very young baby. And then you see another child with a hearing aid. So unfortunately, there are no drugs for the prevention of the hearing loss. And I would say, since we've been involved in this company in the last 9 years, in particular the last 5 years, there have been a real, real push from the pediatric oncology community to do something about this hearing loss because they understand that the quality of life is of paramount importance of these children, and making sure that they do not have to wear these devices is of real importance to them. So we are developing PEDMARK, which is a unique formulation of sodium thiosulfate for the prevention of hearing loss. We have, upon approval, we will have a 7.5 years of pediatric orphan drug exclusivity in the U.S. and 10 years in Europe under a pediatric use marketing authorization. We have done two phase III studies with the two principal pediatric oncology cooperative groups in the world. One is with Children's Oncology Group, and that study was ACCL-0431, which enrolled 131 patients in various heterogeneous tumor types. The study achieved its primary efficacy endpoint on the hearing. The data was reported at ASCO in 2014, and the final results were published in Lancet Oncology in December 2016. The second study is the SIOPEL-6 study, which SIOP is the International Oncology Pediatric Organization, and the L is for their liver group, and is their sixth study where they randomized 109 patients with liver cancer or standard risk hepatoblastoma in these children is the name of this disease. The study achieved its primary efficacy endpoint, and that was reported in the preliminary data in October of 2017. Importantly, the study did not show a difference in survival. So that's actually very, very important. Those final results were published in New England Journal of Medicine of June this year. We have been granted by the FDA Fast Track and a Breakthrough Therapy designation. We have also recently been issued a positive opinion on our pediatric investigational plan by the pediatric committee, PDCO, at EMA. So the next steps for us will be in the next few months to begin submissions with FDA and EMA. our goal is to get this drug approved sometimes by the second half of next year. The other important aspect to this is that, as I mentioned earlier, there is no drug approved for the prevention of hearing loss, and this one will be the first treatment on market for that. So ototoxicity, typically pediatric oncologists see it as soon as the first or second dose. What they end up doing is dose interrupting. They sometimes switch from cisplatin to carboplatin, which tends to be less ototoxic. Nevertheless, these children lose their high frequency hearing loss. This is the ability to pronounce consonants. They also lose the ability to hear background noise. This is highly problematic in very young children who are in the process of acquiring language skills, and that has further to do with their ability to properly develop their IQ later in life. And what we see with older children is that they have a real social emotional issues. They get depressed, withdrawn from their surroundings, and have a difficult time being integrated with their surroundings. The main paper that followed the subject of ototoxicity stated that 60% of these children develop this irreversible hearing loss. And as you could see from the next slide, which speaks to the devastating quality of life for these patients, these are neuroblastoma kids. And they neuroblastoma typically occurs before the age of 5. So what this study did is that it looked at these patients and how they performed, what they achieved in school. And by the time they were grade 3, 30% of them were held back at least one grade. And by the time they reached grade 9, almost 50% of them were held back at least a grade. And one thing to underline from these studies, this is minimal hearing loss. Which talks in particularly to the learning problems that these kids face and their poor quality of life. The two important risk factors that determine the hearing loss for these patients is the cumulative cisplatin dose, that's obvious, but also the second one is the age of the child. So the younger the child, the greater the hearing loss. So we believe the market opportunity for PEDMARK would be based on the annual incidence of the reported solid tumor cases that are treated with platinum-based therapy, both in Europe and the U.S. There's roughly a total of at least 10,000 of these patients every year. We segment the market by low to intermediate risk disease and high risk disease. You'll see later on our clinical data why we do that. In terms of the sodium thiosulfate's mechanism of action, what we do know is that when you give sodium thiosulfate together with cisplatin, it interferes with the anti-tumor activity of cisplatin, so it's very important that sodium thiosulfate is separated in time and in space. So it's given as an IV bolus 6 hours after cisplatin. It allows for the unbound platinum basically to do its anti-tumor activity, and at 6 hours it rescues the body from the bound platinum, which most of the cisplatin is turning to that at that time. The other important aspect to this is that sodium thiosulfate works extracellularly, so does not enter the cell. And again, the six-hour gap is very, very critical because it allows for the unbound platinum to do its anti-tumor activity. Otherwise, STS standalone is considered a GRAS. It's very safe, although we do give a very high bolus, 20 grams per meter square. And what we see with some of the patients is we see some vomiting. So they have to be treated with antiemetic before they get sodium thiosulfate. So this is the first study, which is the Children Oncology Group study, ACL0431, which was published in Lancet. So this was a group of patients with highly heterogeneous tumor types. They were treated with cisplatin per the investigator standard regimen for that disease and disease severity, age of the child, etc. So this study is really as close to real life as you get. The only difference being is that sodium thiosulfate was given 6 hours after the cisplatin for one group and not the other. The primary efficacy endpoint was 4 weeks audiometry for these patients. And from the secondary endpoints, the important ones being to monitor event-free survival and overall survival for these patients. So next slide, you could see the patient characteristics here. These were, again, it was highly representative of children between the ages of 0 to 18 years of age. The tumor types treated were germ cell, hepatoblastoma, medulloblastoma, PNET, which is another type of tumor in the brain, neuroblastoma, osteosarcoma, and other tumors. And you also had patients with localized disease, and you have patients with disseminated disease. So it's really a hodgepodge of different diseases here, different age groups, different chemotherapy regimens for these patients. The important one being that cisplatin had to be given at a cumulative cisplatin dose of over 200 grams per meter square. So you could see the hearing loss on the primary efficacy point which the study met, very similar to what the main paper reported of 60% hearing loss for this patient. Here was 56% without STS. And with STS, that risk was reduced by half, so roughly 29%, so with a p-value of 0.004. Importantly, in a protocol predefined subgroup of children under the age of five, that difference is even further pronounced with patients in this age bracket not getting STS, having a 73% hearing loss versus 21%, again, highly statistical p-value. So the drug works really well preventing the hearing loss. Overall, when you look at the event-free survival and overall survival, there was the same number of events, no difference in event-free survival, and there was no difference in overall survival. However, the physicians in the study looked into why the curves were separating after the year two to the detriment of STS. And what they did was they looked at all the prognosticating factors that were collected in the CRF that could be causing this difference. And what they found is that in localized disease, there was no difference in event-free survival or overall survival. But in disseminated disease, there was the same number of events, but there were six excess deaths in the STS arm, which was driving the difference of the separation of the curves that you saw in the earlier slide. So that obviously raised a concern amongst them that perhaps STS could be interfering with the antitumor activity of cisplatin. The next study, which is the SIOP-L6 study, was just published in New England Journal of Medicine. Unlike the American study or the COG study, it used a single tumor type, which is the liver disease, the liver cancer, the standard risk hepatoblastoma. The study uses cisplatin as a monotherapy, so there was no other chemotherapies involved or other drugs. It was really one single drug. So this population received cisplatin for six cycles and plus or minus STS. The main goal of the study is to measure, just like the COG studies, to measure the hearing loss of these patients between the two groups, and also to monitor the event-free survival and overall survival for these patients. Next slide, you could see the study schema. So these patients get four cycles of cisplatin. They're very young children. They're 12-month old is the typical age for these children. So they're very young, and they tend to go deaf quite quickly after this intensive cisplatin chemotherapy regimen. They also get delayed surgery and two additional cycles of cisplatin. What happens to them is that 90% of them respond to this, and you have 90% survival. So it's a very, very good study to find the effect of STS for these patients, given that their need, based on their age, as well as the high survival, therefore quality of life really matters in this population. So So you could see similar to what COG reported in their study here, 63% had hearing loss versus 33% with a highly statistical p-value of 0.002. Very consistent with what we saw with COG. It also, if you look at amongst different grades, STS did a great job in throughout in preventing the hearing loss for these patients. The important slide is the one for event-free survival and overall survival. Here you could see that basically the curves are the same. In fact, there were six total deaths in the study. Four were on the cisplatin arm, and only two were on the cisplatin plus STS. So there were two excess deaths here the other way. So what can we say from the results of both studies? So this just came out from the New England Journal of Medicine, and I think sums up very well the results of both of these studies, and I would just read them to you verbatim. Taken together, these trials provide definitive evidence that sodium thiosulfate reduces the incidence of cisplatin hearing loss and suggests that sodium thiosulfate is safe to use in patients with standard risk hepatoblastoma and probably in those with other localized cancers. However, the use of sodium thiosulfate in patients with disseminated disease may affect survival, and caution is warranted in that context. So this comes from David Fryer et al., who is the principal investigator for the COG study. And then there is a follow-on editorial from the European group that did the SIAPEL-6 study. We agree with Fryer et al. That drawing conclusions for clinical practice from our trial and ACL-0431 would support the use of sodium thiosulfate for protection from cisplatin-induced hearing loss in patients with any localized solid tumor and encourage careful further clinical assessment in patients with metastatic disease. No definitive conclusion or therapeutic direction should be drawn from any post-hoc analysis, particularly in ACL-0431, in which children were not randomly assigned according to disease-specific key prognosticating factors that are important in determining outcome in metastatic disease. So I think this gives a pretty good explanation and some of sort of key opinion leaders and how they feel about the data from these studies and how the drug would be used. In addition to this, we just finished a, so there were basically six patient advocacy groups that organized a patient-focused drug development meeting. There were representatives from the FDA present in the panel. The purpose of PFDD, there have been 12 granted before this, is really to establish from a patient's perspective what it's like in this case to live with hearing loss. And so we had over 30 long-term survivors from all over the world that showed up with their families that walked through the audience of the limitations that they face in their everyday lives. We had very touching stories of mothers and the difficulties that they have with raising these children. I highly encourage you to, if you're interested in our story, to watch this. It's a four-hour video on YouTube. And the important thing is that I think we had comments from Dr. Greg Riemann, who is the Associate Director for Oncology Sciences at the FDA, who basically stated that it's important for the agency to look at things differently from a risk-benefit perspective, and given the how difficult it is to measure the effects of this hearing loss and what these patients are going through in their everyday lives. So where we are from a development timeline perspective is, I think I mentioned all of these things already, but you know, we're preparing to have our pre-NDA meeting coming up in the next few months. And then subsequent to that, we'll give an update, but our goal is to file as soon as possible and have the drug approved by in the second half of 2019. So with that, our capital structure, it's pretty straightforward. Our market cap is about $150 million. We have $25 million in cash and no debt. Our burn last year was $4 million. This year would be higher than that, but not significantly higher than that. And you know, the idea basically, we've always run this company for our shareholders. As you could see, we have a highly concentrated shareholder list. Management and insiders own approximately 9% of the company as well. So dilution is very dear to us. And so we've always financed from a higher price, and we financed with actually, you know, very strong group of shareholders. One group in particular is Ledian Bio, which is formerly known as Sigma Tau. They are a strategic investor of ours. They own 19% of the company. And on the board, we have Dr. Marco Bruguera, who still leads their rare disease group. And they had an experience with a drug called Oncaspar, which used to be, which they sold to Baxalta, but the drug was sold in pediatric oncology centers, which are not that dissimilar to where STS would be sold. As well as we have Dr. Khalid Islam, who is our chairman, as well as Adrian Haig, came from Gentium, and they had a drug by the name of Defibrotide, which is given after a stem cell transplant. A lot of these pediatric patients go through that, so they knew the market very well from their experience there as well. And obviously, we also have Chris Rallis, who used to be the chief operating officer of Triangle Pharmaceuticals, and he's retired now in North Carolina. Our team is very small. We use several consultants. They have been with us for a long time and have been very helpful in our development of this program. So with that, I would open it up for questions. The question is, did you ask voucher? So the question is, what do we plan to do with a pediatric voucher? Well, number one, we have not received one, so it would be nice if we were to get one. It gets a little complicated with a voucher, and the reason for that is because sodium thiosulfate it's been approved for cyanide poisoning in a combination therapy. And so the argument for us receiving a voucher is whether or not sodium thiosulfate basically is a new entity, which you know, obviously we'll be making, but whether or not we receive the voucher will be difficult to tell at this point. The question is, what is your market size? As you saw from the slides, there's roughly 10,000 new patients every year between Europe and the U.S. With solid tumors that receive cisplatin, or mostly cisplatin. Nine for every 10 patients, 9 of them receive cisplatin. Yeah, so the question is, what is unique about PEDMARK? So what's unique about PEDMARK is that, so number one, we are the only compound, sodium thiosulfate, that has generated efficacy and safety data in a pediatric population. So if you look at the sodium thiosulfate, which is given sequentially with sodium nitrate, there's no, for obvious reasons, there's no clinical efficacy or safety data available. So the number one differentiation is obviously the data set. One has data, the other one does not have data. The second one is that our formulation is designed specifically for treating children, and it's already treated children, the other one has not. So, and there are important aspects to that that obviously will become more apparent once the drug is approved. That's a very good question. So the question is in regards to whether or not, what will be the use of cisplatin going forward. It's interesting because last year at ASCO, they showed data on the PD-1s and how well they work in pediatric oncology, and they don't really do very well. The other aspect to it is that cisplatin does a remarkable job in shrinking the tumor, in these pediatric settings with a very, very high response rate. And because of that, it allows the surgeon to do a better job taking the tumor out, as well as allowing for other chemotherapies and radiation to completely eradicate the tumor. So it's really, it's a mainstay. They have done a really good job optimizing the different regimens throughout the years. If you speak to pediatric oncologists, they obviously would like to see something better come out, but for now and the foreseeable future, it would continue to be a mainstay therapy. Thank you.